NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange.
I believe that the approach that we have taken puts our state on the right path and will help set the foundation to build a more innovative economy, an economy with more good jobs that can support a growing middle class, and an economy where all of our citizens can share in our success and our prosperity. We cannot ignore our challenges and hope that they go away. And we cannot just assume that the good jobs of the innovation economy will simply appear if we do not act.
Governor Maggie Hassan released her first budget yesterday, and it made a lot of Granite Staters happy, including university officials, mental health workers, people at the Departments of Corrections and Safety, environmentalists, the state's hospitals, the court system, and those involved in K-12 education. In a speech that lasted 54 minutes, Hassan promised to restore and, in some cases, increase funding for these programs and more. But the budget has also generated a lot of unease, and not just among Republican lawmakers, who've said that it spends far too much. Hassan's proposal also presents problems for some Democrats because her plan relies in part on $80 million in license fees from a new casino. House Democrats especially seemed uncertain how to respond yesterday, given that many of them oppose expanded gambling. But as Hassan pointed out, the money would go toward programs that Democrats hold dear. And so now that the governor has put forward her priorities, the House and Senate get into the act with their own ideas for state spending and state revenue, with a final budget due by law at the end of June. Today in The Exchange, reviewing Governor Hassan's budget. What's in it? How'd she pay for it? Also, how lawmakers will rework and reshape the governor's proposals. Let's hear from you. What's your reaction to the governor's budget? What parts do you like? What don't you like? Do you feel the numbers add up or not? And how do you feel about her reliance on a new casino and higher tobacco taxes to bring in new revenues? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. With me in studio is Norma Love, longtime State House reporter of the Associated Press, a veteran of many budget addresses. Norma, nice to see you. Thank you
nice
for being here.
Nice to see you, Laura.
Also with us, Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter and editor, and our longtime State House reporter. And Josh, thank you for your time this morning.
You're welcome, Laura.
And also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, you and I were in here yesterday following the speech. Good to see you again today.
Hi, Laura. Glad to be back.
Well, how would you describe this budget, Dean, in a big picture way? And then we'll get into the details.
Sure. A couple of reactions. You may recall yesterday when we were talking after the budget address, Senator Morse referred to the budget as aggressive. And for some reason, that word stuck with me as I went back and looked at the different proposals. You know, I think it's a faithful rendering of what Governor Hassan promised to do on the campaign trail. She said she was going to restore and innovate funding for education in the state, and also restore a lot of the mental health care cuts that have happened in recent years. And the budget clearly does both of those in a pretty big way. You know, the other issue is this big question mark on casino gambling. If you think about it, we most recently had a former governor, John Lynch, who was opposed to casino gambling. We now have a governor who is implicitly relying on casino funding in order to balance her budget. So it's a big jump from what we had just with the previous governor. So as we're seeing this morning, there's a lot of debate and a lot of discussion about whether or not this is doable, whether it's feasible, and whether or not the revenue estimates coming out of gambling are accurate. And then the other two things that we are thinking about are the large increase in the cigarette tax, 30 cents, and the fact that she ended the speech by talking about transportation infrastructure but didn't explicitly come out in favor of a gas tax. There's a lot of discussion about whether or not that's where we're headed. So, you know, overall, I think it was a very faithful rendering of her campaign promises. I think it is a bit aggressive, and it's going to be fascinating to watch all of the discussion about revenue play out over the next 4 months.
Yeah, Norma, what do you think? Again, you've watched a lot of these.
Well, there are people who will say it's spent a lot, but, you know, in the realm of budgets over the years, I think she's probably right there in the middle. Certainly the last budget cut a lot. So I think if you compare it to the last budget, yeah, it's an increase. But I think, you know, overall she did, as Dean said, stayed true to her her campaign. She put in money for the disabled. She put in money for higher ed. But she also answered three buckets of money where there are lawsuits. One of them is a women's prison in the capital budget, which has been asked for and asked for and asked for, but no governor has put it in the capital budget. She put money in for mental health. There's a lawsuit there. She put money in, to deal with areas of the budget that I guess they're hoping with the hospitals, for example, that maybe if we give you a little more money, you'll back off. They're having trouble getting one of their major programs going, which is managed Medicare, Medicaid for all the people who are already in the system, and now they want to expand Medicaid and add people into the system. But you have to have a network, and they haven't been able to get that network up and running, largely because the hospitals that have sued the state over funding they didn't get in the last budget. So giving them a little money, I don't think they're happy with what they got, but it's a start. She did the same thing with the university system and the community colleges. She gave them a little money, said, would you please freeze in-state tuition for the next 2 years? I think what she's trying to do is take steps. I think the battle, as Dean pointed out, will be over how she pays for it.
Well, and since you mentioned higher education and tuition, I want to play a little bit of what the governor said and then, Josh, get your reactions too. But here's the governor talking about higher education yesterday.
That's why our budget substantially restores the cuts made to our community college and university system. The university system will receive an increase of $20 million in fiscal year 14, with an additional increase of $15 million in fiscal year 15, bringing the system back to 90% of where it was before the cuts. And we have not only fully restored funding for the community college system in the first year, but added $3 million in the second. In exchange, the leadership of both the community college and university systems have assured me that they will go to their boards with a plan to freeze tuition for the next 2 years.
Again, that's Governor Maggie Hassan laying out her first budget yesterday in a budget address that lasted about an hour. We're getting your reactions, your questions and thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Josh Rogers, to you, the higher education funding that was a big part early in the speech, not a big surprise, right, Josh? I mean, she really campaigned on a promise to restore higher ed cuts.
Yes, campaigned on a promise to restore and campaigned against what she considered the short-sighted policies of in the last budget by Republicans in the legislature. And, you know, she's pitched this as a workforce issue and a way to stop what, you know, someone describes a hemorrhaging of young people out of the state. The tuition freezes were also something that had been talked about earlier. And so this was pretty much in keeping with what she, you know, pitched to voters all along.
Yeah, and I want to get your thoughts broadly in just a minute, Josh. But you piqued my interest again because you mentioned, you know, young people leaving the state and so forth. And Governor Hassan told a story about that yesterday.
I have too often heard stories like the one told to me by a woman in Londonderry whose daughter went to UMass Lowell because Massachusetts' out-of-state tuition is lower than New Hampshire's in-state tuition. That is unacceptable. We need to make it possible for our middle-class families to compete and share in the American dream. Ever-rising tuition rates can force many families to avoid even considering New Hampshire's public colleges and universities, hurting our competitiveness. If we hope to encourage job creation and innovative economic growth, we cannot keep losing our young people or fail to develop our workforce.
Again, that's the governor talking about losing young people because tuition here is so high. Actually, we did look at the numbers yesterday, and strictly on the basis of tuition alone, UNH for an in-state student would still be lower for an out-of-state student at UMass Lowell. But there's all sorts of programs and scholarships and, you know, regional programs, so you can't really say on a one-to-one comparison every single time. But be that as it may, the broader point, Josh, as you were saying, is young people are leaving the state, and we need to make them stay here, encourage them to stay here.
Yes, and she's campaigned on creating an innovation economy, and apart from the education front, there was not a huge amount in this speech in terms of explicit initiatives on that front. But I mean, there was a focus on education, and I'm sure we can expect more from Governor Hassan on this front.
Yeah, Norma, you want to jump in there?
Well, two things. I think you were right about Lowell. I think they have higher fees. For one thing, my colleague Holly Raymer was looking into that and said, well, if you look at everything in total, I think they are a little more expensive. So you can't single out one thing. However, I think people focus too much on the university system and not enough on the community colleges, which have been kind of the stepchildren of the system for some time. She brought them up to where they were before. So she actually helped them out, I guess, more in a sense than she did the university system, because she said, okay, even though it was a smaller amount of money, I'm going to make you whole. Because they're the ones who do the programs. They work with businesses to develop tailored programs for a particular company that needs specialized workers. And whereas the university system is certainly has a broader focus.
Again, our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Josh, back to you just for a broader thought on the speech overall. Dean quoted Republicans saying this is an aggressive budget.
Well, I guess I would agree that Governor Hassan, made a fairly full-throated argument on behalf of what she campaigned on. And I would also agree with Norma that there is a follow the lawsuit aspect to some of the programmatic decisions she made in terms of where to invest money. And these are areas that are long overdue in the minds of a lot of people, particularly Democrats around the Capitol. But I would say that she sort of laid some of her cards on the table. It was interesting to hear her give the legislature room to move, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not that ends up being the best approach, certainly on the transportation infrastructure point, and also, in terms of gambling. I mean, she's assumed $80 million in revenue, but the budget contains no explicit language on any sort of specific casino proposal. She has said one well-regulated, quote, high-end casino along the border is what she's after.
All right. We will get your reaction after a short break, and we'll also go to the State House, get reaction from some key state lawmakers. All that coming up. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more New Hampshire reacts to Governor Hassan's budget on the exchange here on NHPR. Then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. A loaded issue was a long conversation this week about guns in New Hampshire. NHPR's newsroom examined many topics, many viewpoints. You can catch what you might have missed as we recap the week with an hour-long special program. Join hosts Rick Yanley and Brady Carlson for a loaded issue Sunday at 3 on NHPR and NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Unity Homes from Bensonwood. Designed to improve the world by enhancing quality of life and reducing energy consumption, information at unityhomes.com. And from People's United Bank, offering home equity loans to help maintain individual financial needs, People's United Bank would know how can do. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, reaction to Governor Hassan's budget address, which she gave yesterday. Now it's up to lawmakers to craft their plans for state revenues and state spending. Join us with your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. What's your reaction to the budget overall? What parts do you like? What don't you like? Do you think the numbers add up or not? And how do you feel about her reliance on a new casino and higher tobacco taxes to bring in revenues? 1-800-892-6477 is our number here in The Exchange. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And we go now to the State House to talk to Jeb Bradley. He's a Republican state senator from Wolfboro, Senate Majority Leader. And Senator Bradley, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And again, we appreciate you joining in on this because you've been quoted a lot this morning, Senator Bradley, as saying that the budget relies upon three uncertain sources of revenue, gambling being the biggest source. We could talk forever about gambling. So I just want to focus in with you, Senator Bradley, on what the governor said. She said Massachusetts is gearing up for three casinos and said, quote, Will we allow Massachusetts to take revenue from New Hampshire residents to fund its needs, or will we develop our own plan that will allow us to address social costs and invest in our own priorities? What do you think of the case that she's making there, Senator Bradley?
Well, I mean, clearly that is the case that she has to make to win over skeptical lawmakers. And I say that as somebody who's never voted for gambling in the past, because I just think there are problems associated with gambling. But, you know, for somebody who's had that position, I also have to look at the fact that our experts are saying to us, we're going to lose existing revenue sources if we don't have a gaming facility in New Hampshire. So I think that Governor Hassan does have a chance to make that case to skeptical members of the House. I think it's going to pass the Senate quite easily in any case. So I think when all is said and done, it's likely that Governor Hassan will be able to convince House members. It's still uncertain. And I think that was, you know, what I was trying to express yesterday, the uncertainty of gaming, the cigarette tax, the gas tax, and also, you know, the part of the budget that depends on Medicaid funding. There's a lot of uncertainty from Washington right now with these trillion-dollar deficits stretching far into our nation's future, whether Washington can keep its commitment to pay 90% of the cost of Medicaid for 10 years. So
this is the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. She said, let's go for it. You're less certain than she was that the feds will definitely come through with the money as they say they will.
Oh, I don't know how you can say as a taxpayer or a legislator or any American that you can look out 10 years from now and say, with the kind of budget deficits that we have today, that Washington is not going to have to make changes. Now, all that being said, I think one thing that Governor Hassan should be saluted for, and, you know, there's always a lot of Republican-Democrat discussion back and forth, but one thing that Republicans will say is for existing revenue sources that we have, our business taxes, rooms and meals, the governor had realistic revenue estimates, and I think she's to be saluted for that. She didn't try to inflate revenue estimates to blow up spending in our existing sources, but we're going to have to question until the budget is final in May and June the other sources, the gaming, the cigarette tax, the gas tax potentially. Those things, I think, are uncertain.
Republicans have cautioned that the budget spends too much, a $1 billion increase, I think Senator Morse has been quoted as saying. Here's the question for you, though, Senator Bradley. Maggie Hassan campaigned for governor saying she would undo what she felt was severe damage done to the state by the last Republican legislature. She won by a large margin. Democrats did very well. Does she, Senator Bradley, have a mandate to carry out this spending given the election's results?
Well, I think if you were to ask hardworking New Hampshire citizens who are struggling right now to make ends meet, do they want to pay, you know, a significant new gas tax or, you know, a potentially significant new tobacco tax, you'd get a pretty different answer. So I think, as we always do, we're going to have to set priorities. We're going to have to make tough choices. I think that some of the things that Governor Hassan outlined, like more dollars for mental health, for the disabled community, these have been Senate priorities in the past, and I think we're going to try to find a way to work with her on those. Another couple of things that I would say, the Children in Need of Service program, the community health centers, I salute Governor Hassan for trying to put more money back into them, but at the same time, as we always do, we're going to have to ask, how are you going to pay for things? And we have to make sure that before we spend any revenue, and let's remember, the cuts that we had to make 2 years ago were because the revenue was not there. We're going to want to make sure that we're not spending any money that we don't have.
Senator Bradley, one last question for you. You've mentioned the gas tax a couple times. Governor Hassan, as I recall, didn't come out in her speech and say, I support a gas tax.
She didn't say that, but she surely didn't say that she was opposed to it. And I think it left a lot of people thinking, you know what, if a gas tax increase lands on her desk, and let's remember, she supported, was the architect for the $30 registration fee increase when she was in the state Senate a few years ago. I think the handwriting's on the wall, Laura. If a gas tax increase is on her desk, she'll be signing it.
All right. Well, as the session continues and we look at particular pieces of this budget, I'm sure we'll be talking to you, Senator Bradley. Thank you very much.
As always, a pleasure. Hope you and all your listeners have a great President's Day weekend.
All right. That's Jeb Bradley, Republican State Senator from Wolfboro, Senate Majority Leader. We'd like to take your comments and questions on Governor Hassan's budget as well. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And let's go first, folks, to Keene, where Sean is on the air. Hi, Sean. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you.
Go ahead, Sean.
I'm calling in regards to the potential increase in the cigarette tax in the state of New Hampshire. As a smoker, I feel as though it is a little bit discriminatory that we continue to try to fund our state's woes off the backs of a specific demographic. You know, they continually are increasing the taxes on cigarettes, but yet we never look at, in a state where alcoholism is pretty much state-promoted, to ever increase the taxes on alcohol. I remember hearing in the recent past about a potential increase on beer sales, but never on the liquors. The liquors that more often than not are imbibed by the upper to middle class, the people that are a little bit more affluent. We seem to always strap our financial woes onto the backs of the traditionally less educated, lower income earners. You know, the people that do smoke, I believe statistically it would be proved out that less educated people are more apt to be smokers.
All right, Sean. Yeah, this is a great point, and he's right. You know, the cigarette tax was proposed an increase of 30 cents from current levels, Dean, and yet when talk of a beer tax came up, you know, the governor and others said, no way, no how. What do you think about Sean's point?
Yeah, and it feeds right into something that I hope we'd have a chance to discuss, and that's kind of the political aspect of getting this budget through the legislature without doing any damage to the chances for reelection. And you know, one of the things that is true is typically when you are looking for places to squeeze revenue, you try to squeeze that revenue from groups or demographics that are not likely to affect your chances for reelection if, in fact, you do upset that particular group. So I think, you know, Sean's argument is correct, that chances are that, you know, people who are most likely to smoke are probably a lower income demographic, less likely to vote, perhaps less education. I don't have the exact demographics, but that's his general argument, is that, you know, by increasing the cigarette tax, and in Governor Hassan's view, that still makes us more competitive than any other states around New Hampshire. And the second half of it is because the casino issue does not split clearly along party lines.
That's for sure.
Yeah, it what she's going to have to do is basically incentivize people to go along. So, you know, tell people who normally wouldn't support casino gambling, the only way you're going to get the mental health increases you want is through the casino. The only way you're going to get the increases in education is through the casino. So I think Sean's point feeds into that larger issue.
Well, and Sean, since you mentioned the cigarette tax, let's hear what the governor herself said about it.
Cutting the cigarette tax in the last budget has put added strain on our state and put the health of our young people at risk. New Hampshire has the highest youth smoking rate in the Northeast, with 19.8% of high school students who smoke cigarettes. Cigarette taxes nationwide have proven to be one of the most effective ways to prevent youth smoking, and my budget proposes reversing the cigarette tax cut and increasing the tax by an additional 20 cents, which will still keep our cigarette tax below those of our surrounding states.
Again, Governor Hassan talking about the cigarette tax in her budget address yesterday. Norma Love, I want to return to another tax that Senator Bradley mentioned, but the governor didn't specifically mention in her speech yesterday, and that's the gas tax. Senator Bradley said she didn't say it in words, but she basically said it. What's going on there, Norma?
Well, I think what we've seen is a dynamic being set up where you're going to have the Senate approve gambling with its revenues targeted to higher education, highway improvements, which includes the Interstate 93 expansion. And there's some money for the North Country development, although I hear that may be in play for other things. So you might have the Senate pass that and say, here's our road improvement money. David Campbell of Nashua, Public Works Chairman, has a bill that would increase the gas tax 12 cents over 3 years, and he would increase—
So 4 cents a year.
4 cents a year. And he would increase the registrations, $5 a year. So this combination would, over however many years, they can always stretch it out. There are some people in the, you know, some of the truckers who say, can't you help us out? This is too much. Well, they might do it over 10 years. But whatever, however they stretched it out, if they pass this package, then you would have the money for Interstate 93 expansion. You would have money for communities. You would have, we have hundreds of red-listed bridges, which means that not that they're falling down, but that they're in sore need of being repaired. All the potholes people drive over. The amount of highways that we plow every storm is from here to Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow.
it's like four or five times, so it's not just once and back. So the amount of highway system we have, and we have not put the money into it. The only money we had was stimulus money, and that did I-93. So you have this dynamic set up where in the House, the revenue they're looking at is the gas tax. And in the Senate, they're looking at gambling. And I suspect this will be in the conference committee on the budget in June before it's settled.
Well, we'll have no shortage of things to talk about as that deadline approaches. And you mentioned the House, Norm. I want to invite Terry Norelli now into our conversation. She's a Democratic state representative from Portsmouth and Speaker of the New Hampshire House. And Speaker Norelli, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, and good morning, everyone.
Well, Republicans have said this budget relies too heavily on uncertain revenue sources, whether you're talking about gambling or gas taxes or cigarette taxes. Do they have a point? These are all sources that are far from approved.
Well, the whole budget is far from approved, so let's start there. I think that now that it is in the House will be looking at it in detail, pulling apart every appropriation and every revenue source and trying to make a decision and ascertain what, you know, what we agree with and where we might disagree. Certainly on a lot of the priorities, we agree. On the casino gambling, I think somebody mentioned that that's not a partisan issue. It never has been. That's still open. The one thing I can say is that if we were to end up with gambling, I certainly hope that in the House we would work very hard to ensure that we had the strongest possible legislation. But that's up in the air. It's been more than half of the legislators in the House have never voted on a serious gambling bill. So it's anyone's guess where they are right now.
More than half have never voted on one. So we can't automatically say, you know, there goes another gambling bill to die in the House.
That's correct.
You know, I want to play for you, Speaker Norelli, and our audience, what the governor said yesterday about casinos. She really tied approval of a casino, and she admitted it's controversial, to funding of programs that Democrats really care about, from children and youth services to higher education to mental health to Medicaid. Let's hear what she said, and then I want to ask you about it, Speaker Norelli.
To fund our most pressing priorities, especially higher education and mental health, my budget includes $80 million from licensing one high-end, highly regulated casino. I know expanded gambling has been an ongoing and difficult debate, but the social costs many are worried about are already here. And with Massachusetts moving forward, we can no longer pretend that expanded gambling isn't coming to our communities. It is. The question is, will we allow Massachusetts to take revenue from New Hampshire's residents to fund its needs? Or will we develop our own plan that will allow us to address social costs and invest in our priorities?
So, Speaker Norelli, I just wonder how you feel about that. Kind of putting the pressure on you to say, hey, if you want these things, maybe you need to swallow this casino gambling plan. What do you think?
Well, I think the governor put forth a budget that reflects her priorities and her choices of revenue. And so I don't by any means fault her for putting the $80 million licensing fee in there because she believes that we should have gambling and use the money for the budget. I also want to, though, respect all of the legislators in the House and in the Senate, for that matter, who have very, very strong emotional feelings about the gambling issue. We have those who, you know, morally believe that we shouldn't have gambling, and we have those that think that we should have gambling even if it didn't raise a dime. And in between, I think we have a lot of people who have always been sort of on the fence, that maybe can argue one side of it one day and the other side of it the other day. And I want to thank the governor for not putting the policy of gambling in the actual budget bills. This will give us the opportunity to have a real, thoughtful, thorough, respectful, data-driven, evidence-based debate on gambling. And I think that's what we need to do.
Speaker Norelli, this is Josh Rogers. You've been a critic of gambling in the past. Are you open-minded about the possibility of a casino?
Actually, I think that you mischaracterized my position. I have concerns about gambling. I always have. I have never taken a position. As I said, we have a lot of legislators who have a very deep and intense emotional reaction to gambling on both sides. And again, I want to respect that. And on both sides of the issue and on both sides of the aisle, quite frankly.
So you voted for gambling bills before?
No, I have never. I didn't vote on gambling bills because I didn't vote. And I have left it up to members to vote as they choose. I happen to be one of those people, I think, that on one day I could argue it one way, and on another day I could argue it another way. We have gambling in New Hampshire. You know, so if you don't want a casino because you don't want gambling, well, we have gambling. If we have one casino that's highly regulated versus all of the places where we have gambling now, and somebody yesterday was just telling me about some place in Milford that early in the morning he goes by and the parking lot is full. A lot of people don't realize that we have gambling here. On the other hand, I could argue that I don't think that's the branding that we want to do for the state of New Hampshire. I don't think that's why people want to come to New Hampshire. They want to come to New Hampshire for our historical communities and our beautiful mountains and our lakes and our, you know, they want to come here for that kind of tourism.
Well,
so
Speaker
I think
Norelli,
it's a debate that we'll have to have.
Well, and I'm sure we'll be holding that conversation again here on The Exchange. I want to thank you for giving us your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
That's Terry Norelli, Democratic State Representative from Portsmouth, Speaker of the New Hampshire House. When we come back, more reaction from our panel in studio and your thoughts, too, at 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the New Hampshire Division of Economic Development, helping Granite State businesses grow and prosper online at nheconomy.com. And from North Branch Construction, 54 years experience building custom homes to multi-million dollar eco-friendly commercial buildings on time, on budget, online at northbranch.net. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Sustaining memberships are powerful. Here's why. Your contribution is deducted each month from an account of your choice for as long as you want. It's convenient for you, and it creates a stable foundation of support for your public radio service. Being able to count on your support means NHPR can do a better job of serving you. Sustaining members, transforming the future of public radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at Maggie Hassan's budget. The new governor presented her first budget yesterday to the legislature. We've been looking at what it includes, how it would pay for some of the increased funding that it calls for, and we invite your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Now that you've heard a little bit about what is in this budget, what do you think? What parts of it do you agree with? What parts don't you like? Do you think the numbers add up or not? And especially, how do you feel about her reliance on casino gambling, higher tobacco taxes to bring in new revenue? Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And Norma Love, Josh Rogers, Dean Spiliotis, I want to return to something that Norma said earlier and get your thoughts too, Dean. And that's budget by lawsuit. Several of the big chunks of spending in this budget are going toward areas where the state has been sued. So she kind of had to do that, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. That's something that I bet a lot of people were not aware of, and it is a fascinating little coincidence. You know, I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as a sort of, you know, kind of cover-your-behind approach to setting a legislative agenda, but it also is a legitimate indicator, perhaps, of, you know, where the state needs to kind of redirect its resources. So, you know, I think you can look, you can sort of look at it as a sort of purely instrumental approach to setting the agenda, but I also think it may substantively give her some ideas as she was sort of putting together the budget. And again, this has been going on for a while, so this is nothing new. We heard about a lot of this during the campaign. Sure. I mean, and you know, Norma may have some insight into kind of the legalities of it, but, you know, I see it as kind of a legitimate way to think about, you know, where certain sectors of the state need resources redirected.
Well, and one of the major lawsuits that's gotten a lot of attention in the press lately has to do with the state's mental health system. Let's hear what the governor said about that.
As we work to improve the health of all of our citizens, we must address one of our most pressing public health challenges, the need to restore our mental health system. This budget helps us move forward with implementing the state's 10-year mental health plan. That is critical for the safety of the public and the health and well-being of individual citizens. Each of us knows of someone, a friend, a family member, a neighbor who has suffered from mental illness. Right now, many children who are suicidal are stuck for days in emergency rooms because there is nowhere else for them to go. Dozens of people are waiting on a daily basis for critical mental health care. Without proper facilities or treatment, many have been restrained or even sedated. Some leave without care at all, often putting themselves and those around them at risk of harm. That's not the kind of state we are.
Norma Love, again, the governor, talking about mental health care, and there's been a lot of concern about it. As she said, what seems to be new to me, correct me if I'm wrong, is that now it's not just people in the mental health system saying, help us out here. Also, hospital executives are saying it's devastating to our emergency rooms. Police officers are saying this is a problem. We can't deal with it. How much more political energy do you see, Norma, around more funding for the mental health system, given the involvement of these newer groups?
Well, I mean, we've had a plan that we were supposed to be acting on, but it just trickle of funding. It never got put into effect as fast or as fully as people thought it should be, so they filed a lawsuit. And it seems like, I hate to say it, but over my years covering government, lawsuits tend to move things along. There have been lawsuits against the men's prison, for example, the Lahman Decree, which many, many years ago, the lawsuits that have moved along in the developmentally disabled community. I mean, you have a state that may care about these areas, and I have no doubt that this isn't important to Maggie Hassan. I think that the women's prison is equally important. But I think what happens is we get into the fight, and over the last decade, it's education funding that sucked all the oxygen out of the air. I think one thing nobody mentioned was Newtown. I think since Newtown, we've had a whole lot more discussion about mental health and the consequences of not helping people who might, as she mentioned in her speech, harm themselves or others.
She doesn't say Newtown directly, but she hints at it, doesn't she?
Well, I mean, if you look back to her inaugural address where she did explicitly mention Newtown, she talked about it in terms of, you know, we need to work together to support policies that make our communities stronger and safer. And I think that, you know, this funding decision would be an example of that. And, you know, she's talking about spending $28 million, you know, 10-bed crisis center in an existing hospital, 16 beds for short-term treatment, and funding of teams to, you know, help avert having people, you know, end up in hospitals, and some teams specifically dedicated towards working with children.
Yeah, there's a lot of specifics
in there. You know, that's all a reasonably big deal, and it will be interesting to see how much of that is preserved through the budget process.
Okay, and Norma mentioned something else. I want to ask you about it, Josh, and this has to do with public education, K through 12. There was some promises of, you know, more funding there for catastrophic events, meaning when a child with severe disabilities moves in and the school district has to pick that up. There was some mention of help with transportation, school building aid. But the words education funding amendment were not mentioned yesterday.
No, they weren't. I mean, they weren't mentioned in her, it's not something that there's a huge appetite for. And you could say for the moment the education funding situation has stabilized a bit. She says that adequacy is fully funded in this budget. And
But adequacy is pretty much frozen.
Yes, that's the other half of it.
Adequacy means what the state gives to local school districts for a so-called adequate education. Well, that struck me as interesting because so many times in these speeches we do hear about, I'm going to get an amendment passed, we're going to fix this problem.
And how many
this
times does an amendment get passed?
Right, which is probably why she left it out.
If they couldn't do it last session and they couldn't do it under Craig Benson when they had a conservative legislature, I have my doubts whether they'll ever do it.
I want to bring up another aspect of education that the governor mentioned, and it has to do with charter schools. Now, these are public, alternative public schools whose funding in some places has been in question because they're state-sponsored, not sponsored by local communities, and there's been some trouble with their state funding. Let's hear what the governor said about that.
This budget will help encourage innovation by providing funding to allow new charter schools to open and to allow existing charter schools to accept new enrollees. At the same time, these charter schools have a responsibility to live within their budgets, and so this budget sets new parameters and provides authority for the Department of Education to prioritize new charter schools' approval to underserved communities. To help pay for these investments, this budget repeals the voucher tax credit that would have diverted millions of dollars in taxpayer money to private and religious schools with no accountability.
So again, that's Governor Hassan talking about charter schools, saying the money could come from, Norma, repealing this private school tax scholarship program, what opponents call a voucher program. How much is this about the money itself, Norma, and how much is this just about philosophy, the long debate over whether public dollars should go to private schools?
Well, there is already a bill coming through the House to do the same thing.
To repeal this.
Correct. I think it was pushed through by Republicans last time. It's something that they believe that you should open up the system. I think Democrats, by and large, have opposed it, and the argument is that it takes money away. If you take a child out of a public school, you don't end the fixed costs that they must still pay for and the public must still pay for. As far as the charter schools, I found that more interesting in that I haven't seen the language, but she wants to give the State Board of Education more control over siting. In other words, if there are three science and technology charter schools in Nashua coming forward with applications, maybe they need one up north.
Underserved communities,
said. Yeah, placement and how many students and a little more control so that I think that puts – it's not an open-ended on the dollars because that was one of the arguments, that the board wouldn't approve anymore because they weren't sure the funding was coming.
All right. Well,
and on the education tax credit issue there is a bill in to repeal. Some of the steam came out of that effort when Nancy Stiles, a Republican in the Senate, said that, while she didn't favor that law, she's not going to vote to repeal it. And so the repeal is facing a potential problem in the Senate. But that's also something that's subject to a lawsuit. There's been a suit over that, and whether or not it's constitutional. From civil liberties groups, and so that may ultimately be decided by courts. But Hassan, there'll be a fight when it gets to the Senate over the survival of the tax credit program.
Norma, super
very
quick. Yeah.
Very quick point. Anything in the budget is an omnibus bill has a much better chance of living if it's standalone.
From schools to another announcement in this budget, which was huge, and we haven't talked about it yet, and that's the governor's decision to go along with Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. This has been a big issue for governors around the country, whether or not to expand Medicaid as described by the Act, as called for by the Act. I want to play for you what the governor said, and then Dean ask you about that.
Our budget includes Medicaid expansion. It is the right thing to do for our economy, for our state's finances, and for our families.
As both Democratic and Republican governors around the nation have said, it's a good deal, one that will, among other things, allow us to save money in existing state programs while increasing state revenues. Under federal law, people insured through Medicaid expansion will receive coverage parity for mental health and substance abuse treatment. This parity is smart, and it is right, and so this budget provides for mental health and substance abuse treatment coverage for our existing Medicaid population as well.
And Dean Spiliotis, as the governor herself pointed out yesterday, Republican and Democratic governors around the country, lots of them are saying, yeah, let's expand Medicaid.
That's right. This has been one of several hotly contested aspects of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And the concern, particularly among Republican governors, has been that it's essentially kind of a backdoor to an unfunded mandate. You know, you agree to accept expanded Medicaid funding from the federal government. They fund the program at 100% initially. I think Governor Hassan mentioned it, $2.5 billion. So you get 100% funding from the federal government initially. Eventually, it drops down to, I think, 90% or maybe even a little bit lower. So the concern is that over time, that money won't be there, and then the state is stuck having to service this expanded Medicaid population. And this has been kind of a big kind of states' rights issue almost with a number of these governors. But as you said just recently, John Kasich, the Republican governor of Ohio, said he was going to take the money. A number of other Republican governors have said they're going to take the money. So it's taken a little bit of kind of the ideological steam out of the issue, and it's given a number of other governors particularly Republicans, kind of cover to take that money. So the big question is this going to eventually end up being a debate about an unfunded mandate? But clearly Governor Hassan is kind of counting on that additional money as part of the budget.
Sure, and it's a big part of the budget in terms of health care anyway. Yep. And yet we did hear some skepticism from Senator Bradley, the Senate Majority Leader, Dean, saying, I'm not so sure the feds will come through with this.
Yeah, we've been hearing that for a long time since it was initially proposed that it's not just Medicaid, it's a number of different aspects of Obamacare
One part of the budget is that under the expansion of Medicaid, it means that insurance premium tax and the Affordable mm-hmm. Care insurance premium tax will be bumped up. So there's going to be $20 million in this budget from that.
Right.
And then, you know, there's going to be several hundred million dollars worth of Medicaid coverage that will essentially, you know, flow through the state. So it's a lot of money that will be coming in, and you know, supporters of this say it's going to create economic development opportunities in healthcare, and those on the other
and
side say
population.
That you know, once we get 10 years out, when the promises cease, that you know, the states are going to be left holding the bag. And
the trick is going to be the 100% is a certain time certain. You have to do it by a time certain, and it applies to new people, not your existing population. So deciding who's your existing population, who is still at 50-50, I think Jeb Bradley has some concerns around how are you going to decide that?
Yeah. Well, lots more to follow up on, as I said, with a lot of topics this morning, but perhaps especially that one, Norma. Let's take another call if we could. Richie joins us from Newport. Hi, Richie. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hey, I just want to live in Concord because it sounds like a great place to live where you can balance a budget based on money you don't have. you don't have approval for the gambling casino. You don't know what it's going to bring in for revenue, yet you can balance a budget on it. That's like me going to the bank and saying, you know, I want to buy that house on the hill, and I got this Powerball ticket. You think you can approve it?
So,
you know,
Richie,
I mean, let's be realistic here. How are you going to pass a budget in June based on all money you don't even have?
You know, Richie, I want to thank you for calling and also acknowledge I've got two emails here that I won't have time to read, but Christopher in Manchester and Dave in Kearsarge both agree with Richie, Dean Spiliotis. Richie and our emailers do not like this idea of gambling, and they say it's not a done deal.
Right. It's on a number of levels, and this is one of the things we've been hearing from critics this morning in the wake of the budget address is, you know, there's dispute about how much money it actually will bring in, whether you can even get $80 million for a single license.
Or
just whether it's worth $80 million, plus then you have the time issue. Can they do it in time? So you are hearing that criticism that so much hinges on the ability to get this through the House and to get it at a revenue level that makes sense, that's going to be one of the flashpoints.
But I think every budget that is offered has revenues that are not set in law. Cigarette tax is not set in law.
Remember the JUA, the Joint Underwriting Association that Governor Lynch
You propose
came up
a plan
with.
As a governor, the House takes it and it proposes a plan, and it has a rule that if it doesn't pass a bill that hasn't passed the Senate yet, but it passes it with revenues, it can count those. So it's a moves along in a process, and until you get to the end of June, you don't have a final budget with final revenues. You don't know.
Josh, wrap it up for us as this process unrolls. Well,
I would echo what Norma says, is that every budget, it's a speculative document until you get the assent from the people who are elected to make those decisions. So we're going to be at this until the end of June and maybe beyond. That's been known to happen occasionally.
All right. Well, Richie, we will definitely be following this, not only in terms of the overall budget, but specifically the gambling issue that you raised. So thanks a lot for calling. And Norma Love and Josh Rogers, thank you all very much for being here. Norma, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Norma Love, longtime State House reporter for the Associated Press. Josh Rogers, thanks for your time.
You're welcome, Laura.
Josh Rogers, NHPR senior political reporter and editor. And Dean Spiliotis, always good to see you. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar and School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Every weekday at 9 a.m., The Exchange examines the issues that concern you, the ones you talk about around the water cooler or at the breakfast table. Our focus is the news of the day, be it politics, education, or the environment. We bring you conversations about events half a world away or just down the street. I'm Laura Kanoi. Join me for The Exchange, weekday mornings at 9 on NHPR.
The domestic hour of the Friday.